This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When President Obama came into office, the world was facing an economic disaster. The Dodd-Frank Act, crafted during the Obama administration, was a response to the meltdown of the financial industry. It brought the most significant changes in financial regulation since the Great Depression and also provided some consumer protections. But President Trump has called the legislation a disaster and, vowing to do a number on it, signed an executive order described by the New York Times as vague in its wording and expansive in its reach. It opens the door to revisiting the law and chiseling away at it. Many banks have chafed at the limitations Dodd-Frank places on their operations, but others see the law as providing needed protections against a system that went awry, causing major banks to collapse, and nearly taking the world economy with them. So, there are two sides to this, and we are hopefully going to hear from both of them. The Charlotte Observer's Rick Rothacker is here to provide context and will be with us through the hour. A business reporter, he's written extensively about the 2008 financial crisis and its aftermath, including the genesis of Dodd-Frank and its provisions. Welcome back to the program. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Let me start with you. It seems to be included in its official title, but flesh it out. What was the intent of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, which is its official title?
Yeah, this was the big reaction, like you said, to the financial crisis. Things are out of control. We need to rein these banks in and create some new rules to create them from doing this again. Mm-hmm. Of course, with any of these laws, when they go to Congress, things get thrown in, it expands. It was more than 2,000 pages of laws, and then agencies have to implement the rules, which, you know, in some cases they're still kind of figuring out the final rules. It did some things like create the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was sort of a regulator focused on consumers. It had a Volcker rule, which was to prevent banks from doing trading with their own money, which sort of had that image of these casinos using the money from depositors to waste away, and created some rules on mortgages. So covered a lot of broad expanse of territory to try to keep banks from having problems again.
We have short memories, so remind us of where we were in 2007, 2008, right after the presidential election, when George Bush started to face this crisis, and then it was taken over by President Obama. People tend to forget how serious things were, and although we've done a number of shows on it, every show we've done has brought to light just how precipitous the financial collapse, the world economy's collapse was going to be. I mean, we came this close to a Great Depression.
Yeah, you remember, I mean, fall of 2008, first Lehman Brothers goes into bankruptcy, Bank of America buys Merrill Lynch, Wachovia, our big hometown bank, literally was about ready to collapse, and went back and forth. First Citigroup was going to buy it, then Wells Fargo. It was sort of this domino effect of, you know, which bank's going to go next.
So there was a lot of discussion about what we should do to rescue the economy back then, and there were people on one side saying we need to save the banks, we need to shore up the economy, we need to pump government money in, we need to save the car companies, etc. There were other people who said, let them collapse, let them go away, because they did bad things and they deserve to fail. The first side won, the previous side won. But was there how much discussion or debate how much animosity was there toward Dodd-Frank even being passed?
It was a big fight, and it's funny, there was kind of all different angles to it. Like you said, there were some people saying, we should just let these banks fail. We shouldn't bail them out. You know, they'll do it again if we bail them out. It's sort of with your kid. If you don't punish them, they're going to do the same mistakes again. And so there's some who feel that Dodd-Frank didn't really solve that problem. Do we really believe that if there's another big crisis, that we won't rescue the banks again? And so some of the efforts are, let's make this even tougher, that there's a way to put a bank into bankruptcy for sure and just move on. Others say, you know, kind of hold your nose, but it was worth it. The whole economy didn't fall apart. You know, the hundreds of thousands of people who work at banks weren't unemployed. You know, we've put some new rules so it won't happen again.
You mentioned something in your first comment about Dodd-Frank, which was signed into law July 21st, 2010. But there are still provisions of the law that have yet to go into effect. Why?
Well, you go through this process of, you know, the broad outline is in the bill, and then the agencies that actually implement it add the new regulations. They put things out for public comment. They fight over it. You know, in the SEC, there's a commission, so you have Republicans and Democrats who have to agree and vote on things. My understanding is a lot of it, you know, a lot of the big stuff's already been taken care of, but there still is little tiny things that are still being figured out. And my understanding is unraveling it will go through some of that process as well. So it's not just a stroke of a pen, everything will go away.
Not all banks did bad things. Some of them did get caught up in what happened with other banks because it's all interconnected in the financial system somehow. But was this universally opposed by banks, or did some banks say, yeah, we kind of need some more rules?
You know, it was kind of interesting. You know, at the time, that's 2010, Bank of America is still kind of working their way out of the crisis. You know, Brian Moynihan, the CEO there, he was one of the early supporters of having a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. We talked to him in December, and he said, you know, there's some good sides of it that, for one, like you said, the law put everyone under the regulatory tent. So while the banks had to follow rules, the countrywide mortgage lenders of the world were out doing their own thing sometimes. So they almost like a level playing field of everyone being under the same rules. So there's not universal hatred for it, but I think obviously the onerous compliance and keeping up with all the rules is challenging for them.
How difficult has it been, A, to implement, and B, to maintain?
Well, I mean, one, you know, Dion Roberts at the Observer, he's written a lot that one of the big hiring sprees in Charlotte has been compliance officers. They need to hire all these people to go through the rules and make sure you're following the rules, which can be a good thing and keep you out of trouble. But if you're a bank, you just see that as an expense, and it's not a lender who's going to go out and bring you in more business. So it's a lot of work for them.
Are banks more upset by this, or are politicians more upset by this? Not all politicians, but certain politicians who want to repeal this, are they more upset than the banks?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, and you have big banks and little banks, and I think that's some of the division is the big banks. It's a lot of work. It's frustrating. Some of them kind of feel a little chagrined still that they were part of the crisis. They've got the capability to hire all the compliance officers. The little banks who feel like they had nothing to do with this, they're trying to hire people. That's a huge part of their budget, and that's led them to do mergers and actually get bigger themselves. And I think when you see some of the Republicans' efforts to repeal or change Dodd-Frank, a lot of it's coming from the community banks who say, hey, wait, we weren't the problem. Why are we having to go through so many rules to comply?
Congressman Robert Pittenger was supposed to be with us to talk about his impression of Dodd-Frank. We were going to put him on right now, but he has been called into a security briefing. Congressman Pittenger is from the 9th Congressional District in North Carolina and would like to see a repeal of Dodd-Frank. We had the other side booked for later in the show, so let's put them on first and hope that we can hear from Congressman Pittenger before the end of the program. Christopher Kukla is Executive Vice President of the Center for Responsible Lending. He's been working on researching financial practices in an effort to guide policymakers in improving the state of lending since 2002, and he joins us, I believe, from Durham. Welcome to the program.
That's great. I am in Durham, and thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us. And for being flexible. One of the president's complaints about Dodd-Frank is that some of his best friends, he says, have found it difficult to run their small businesses because they cannot get a loan. And certainly the rules regarding mortgage loans have tightened since the meltdown, and other loans have tightened since the meltdown. As Executive Vice President of the Center for Responsible Lending, how big a problem do you consider this to be?
Well, I think that is one of the things that people tend to point to try to say that we need to repeal the law. Unfortunately, the data doesn't necessarily bear that out. If you look at the number of loans that are being made, for instance, mortgage lending is almost at its pre-crisis peak, which was an enormous amount of lending before and certainly has grown since Dodd-Frank was passed. Auto loans outstanding are at a record high. They've crossed the $1 trillion threshold, which we've never had. Other loans are being made available. I think, and in the commercial lending side, Reuters reported recently that commercial lending is also at some of the highest that it's ever been.
Well, according to the St. Louis Federal Reserve, lending by banks is now nearly double where it was in December 2010. More than $2 trillion was loaned last year, And in the third quarter of last year, banks posted a record profit of $45.2 billion. So when the president says, some of my best friends who had great businesses, those are his words, can't get a loan, is that an alternate fact? Is there some truth to that? Is it dependent on a case-by-case basis? Is it more difficult for small businesses to get a loan than it is for me to go out and get a car loan for my personal self? What's the story there?
Well, and I think there are definitely differences in small business lending compared to, you know, traditional lending. You have to look at the business, look at the cash flow, look at what's going on. And I have no idea, you know, who they are or what their businesses are like. So I can't comment on whether or not that's true or not, because I have no idea. What I can say is that, you know, as you just said, lending is up from the depths of the crisis. Dodd-Frank has been extraordinarily successful, and I think there are a couple of reasons why. I think one is something that Rick mentioned, which is that it created a level playing field. It put everybody under the regulatory tent, and it required everybody to play by the same rules. And one of the reasons that community banks in particular suffered during the crisis was that there were non-depository institutions, so, you know, not bank-related lenders, who were out there doing some things that were just terrible. And they were willing to mislead consumers about the terms of those loans, and it made it impossible for consumer bankers or community bankers who were, you know, being upfront about what their loans looked like to be able to compete.
Who are you talking about? Are you talking about payday loan operations or some of those mortgage companies?
Mortgage brokers, mortgage bankers. Yeah, the ones that, you know, the mortgage brokers who were funded by Wall Street that were out, you know, just chasing any loan that they could find, and, you know, they were the ones engaging in the no income, no asset, no job loans or the ninja loans. So certainly that was an important piece. And then the second piece is that financial regulators did not have consumer protection. They did not see that at the same level as what they call in the banking industry safety and soundness, or really, is the bank profitable and is the bank going to be able to stay afloat for a good long time? And this put consumer protection on par with safety and soundness, and created a separate agency whose job it was to really look out for consumers, which is something we never had and has been extraordinarily successful.
What is the loan picture here in Charlotte? What are you hearing anecdotally, or maybe you have some actual statistics on this, Rick, in terms of people's ability to get loans, particularly small businesses, because that is what the president referred to in this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's going to be anecdotal. I mean, certainly you hear cases where, you know, there are, I think, more hoops to jump through nowadays than there used to be, certainly when, you know, like you're saying, that there's these no interest, no job type loans. So there are, I think, more hoops. But I think overall the numbers are going up. You look at our banks, you know, they are lending more money. But if it's your business and you're having trouble, that's going to be frustrating, and you might call your local congressman.
But car sales are up, so people are getting car loans. And the mortgage business, or home sales in Charlotte are abounding. So that must mean people can get mortgage loans. Yes, it is more difficult to get them today than it was in 2007. Is that right? Much more difficult?
Yeah,
you have to jump through hoops.
I'd say there's more hoops you got to get through nowadays to get a loan. But it's there for a lot of people. But there are, you know, there's less, you know, subprime loans were a way for people who didn't have as good a credit to get a loan. So it's challenging for certainly some people.
And is some of that coming back, the ability to get some of these, not subprime, but maybe they have a new name for them now? Is it easier now in some cases to get these home mortgage loans?
I haven't focused on it a lot lately, but there is always concern that there's new ways to kind of get around the rules.
Rick Rothacker is with us from the Charlotte Observer, Christopher Kukla from the Center for Responsible Lending, and hopefully before the end of the hour we'll hear from Congressman Robert Pittenger. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, hosting a Philip Gavriel Trunk Show in celebration of Valentine's Day tomorrow and Friday, 10 a.m. till 6 p.m., Saturday, 10 a.m. till 4, featuring chocolate and wine pairings. Details at DonaldHack.com. And the Charlotte Symphony presenting an evening of Mozart, Brahms, and Vaughan Williams Friday and Saturday at Belk Theater. Christopher Warren Green conducts. Tickets at charlottesymphony.org. President Trump's executive order temporarily banning travel to the U.S. from 7 Muslim-majority countries is reverberating nationwide. So what has been its impact on Charlotte? How many refugees do we have? Where did they come from? We'll get into that, but we start with Mayor Jennifer Roberts, who spoke of the refugee ban in her State of the City address this week. We'll talk about that, about HB2, about whether the city might consider future proposals for Major League Soccer, and more on this program tomorrow at 9.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, America's opioid crisis was the talk of the campaign trail. It's still growing. What now? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
That conversation on Point from 10 to noon following Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Dodd-Frank because the president has ordered a review of Dodd-Frank, some of the provisions for which have yet to go through, even though the law was passed in July of 2010. And we're talking about that with Rick Rothacker, who's the business reporter for the Charlotte Observer. He's covered this extensively over the years, among many, many, many other things. We'll try to get in touch with Representative Robert Pittenger, who was to be with us. He is in favor of repealing Dodd-Frank and has put forth his own bill to replace part of that. And hopefully we'll get him. He was called into a security briefing. But thankfully, our second half guest was able to come in here for the first half, Christopher Kukla, Executive Vice President for the Center for Responsible Lending. The Congressman Pittenger and many of his Republican colleagues, Christopher, in Congress, see Dodd-Frank as onerous and as a drag on the economy. Congressman Pittenger says Dodd-Frank could cause another financial crisis. But you say repealing the law could cause that crisis. How so?
Right. So I think if we look back to what led to the financial crisis, we had a situation where you had regulators fighting each other to see who could be the most lenient. Consumer protection took a back seat to generating loans and profits. And so what we had was a situation where a number of loans were being made that just simply shouldn't have been being made in the first place. And so I think the reaction to that through Dodd-Frank was to, as we said earlier, to create rules of the road that everybody had to play by, but also ensuring that we were taking common sense steps, like ensuring that people could afford to repay their loans before you make them, which is why you might have to jump through a few more hoops to get your mortgage, but it's to ensure that everybody that's getting into the system is going to be able to stay in the system. But also taking note of that there were lots of other financial abuses that were occurring that simply just were not being addressed. And so the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the consumer agency, was created in large part to try to address those concerns. And actually, that part of the law has returned billions of dollars into consumers' pockets, over $12 billion over the last 4 years of fees and other charges that should never have been charged. They were either cheating their customers or they were misleading their customers, and that money's been returned. Hundreds of thousands of people have been able to file complaints with the Bureau. And have their issues addressed and in a way that would not have happened otherwise. And anybody who's been in a fight with a financial institution knows how frustrating and powerless that can feel.
Having
a bureau that's on your side can really help.
Is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which came into being because of Dodd-Frank, something that's tied strictly to Dodd-Frank, Rick? Would the repeal of Dodd-Frank cause the Consumer Protection Bureau to go away?
It was created by Dodd-Frank, and you know what Donald Trump has done is saying review all these rules, and it's not an outright yes or no vote to repeal everything. It's sort of a beginning of such a process. The chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, Hinserling, he has a proposal that would sort of replace Dodd-Frank that would does raise questions about whether they would try to get rid of the CFPB or change it. There's a lot of Republicans didn't like the structure. It's not funded by Congress. it's funded through the Federal Reserve, and so they can't change their appropriations. It's hard to make the leader, Richard Cordray, leave. And so could they try to go in and adjust how it works or outright try to get rid of it?
As we said, we try to get Congressman Pittenger on this program, and we may still get him on to talk about why he feels this should go away, Dodd-Frank should go away. But many Republicans in Congress have said this for years, not just with the election of Donald Trump. And U.S. Congressman Patrick McHenry from North Carolina's 10th District says that Dodd-Frank's regulations have driven up costs and made credit less available for families and small businesses throughout Western North Carolina. Over the past 6 years, the House Financial Services Committee has worked tirelessly to replace this broken law with a system that actually brings down costs and promotes economic growth, all while maintaining strong protections for American consumers. I'm hearing from you, Christopher, that loans are up, that profits are up, that this has been an extraordinarily successful law. So who's right? Who's telling the truth here, Rick? I mean, what's the story here? Is it good and bad, or is it good or bad?
Well, I mean, you look back certainly in 2010, 2011, when I was writing stories about, you know, the latest data, you were seeing, you know, less loans being made. So certainly I think and that was, you know, we were still recovering from the recession. I was looking at some of the numbers just recently. I mean, total loans by all banks were up by $590 billion, 6%. And actually, community banks, it was a little bit higher rate. So it's certainly up. But I think you can also always say, you know, could it be even higher? And so if you're the business not getting that loan, you're frustrated, obviously.
Would the banks be making more money in the absence of Dodd-Frank?
I would say they would be, because they'd have less expenses for compliance officers and folks like that. Potentially, though, we can find out you can lose a lot of money on the other end if you're sued or have all these settlements and things like that. So it can be prudent to be careful now and not get caught later.
And it has been said that this is particularly tough on small banks because they don't have the infrastructure to deal with the paperwork and the reporting and the data keeping that has to be done to make sure that you're in compliance with Dodd-Frank and building the kinds of reserves, cash reserves, that Dodd-Frank has required. But the other part of that is that they've been hurt by low interest rates, and that you take away Dodd-Frank and even they're still going to be in a bad situation.
Well, that's a really good point. It's not just these compliance costs that have made it particularly tough on community banks. Low interest rates have hurt them, and they're more reliant on take your deposit, make a loan, make a little bit of money in between. They don't have as much of the fees from brokerage and other services. And so they've suffered, you know, probably as much from some of the economic things as the compliance, but it's kind of one more, you know, issue for them to deal with.
This strikes me as not unlike the Affordable Care Act. They wanted to repeal and replace it. They're having trouble repealing it now because it's become another part of the third rail of politics in America, because people who have it, who never had insurance, like it and they want to keep it, etc. And former Massachusetts Congressman Barney Frank, whose name is on the bill, Dodd-Frank, says there are pieces of the legislation that actually could be fixed, and particularly the asset threshold for a bank to be considered too big to fail. He thinks this could be loosened up. Christopher, would you be okay with that? Would that be a good idea to maybe have a different set of rules for smaller banks versus the mega banks like Citibank, JPMorgan Chase, Bank of America?
You know, and I think that's a good question, and I think that's where part of this has gotten caught up. I think there is some agreement among both consumer advocates and the industry that there may be parts of the law that we could tweak. The problem is that it's been caught up in this larger discussion of, well, we'll tweak these laws, but we're also going to get rid of the Consumer Protection Bureau, or we're going to put in place restrictions on the Bureau to be able to do its job. And so I think, you know, separating out those two, are there things that we might be able to talk about and come to some agreement on? I think that's true. Unfortunately, the way that this bargain has been presented is the only way that you can get to that is if you're willing to eviscerate the rest of the law. And that's just not something that any of us are willing to stand behind.
Do you think the bank helps consumers more than it hurts the banks? Or is it fairly equal, helping and hurting at the same time?
I'm sorry, are you asking if Dodd-Frank is
If Dodd-Frank, does Dodd-Frank help hurt the banks more than it helps consumers or vice versa, or is it about 50-50?
No, I think a couple things that came up here. One is Rick said that, you know, one of the biggest hiring sprees was of compliance folks within banking institutions. And I think that was also a reflection, however, of the fact that there wasn't enough attention paid to compliance and then not enough attention paid to consumer protection. And so I think that was actually a swing in the pendulum in the right direction. You know, I think it's caused banks to have to follow the rules a little bit more closely. I think one of the reasons in particular that the Consumer Bureau has been in the crosshairs is because they have been aggressive in forcing institutions, large and small, to follow the law. I think it has been helpful to the industry and to consumers, even though there are certainly pieces of it that some in the lending industry don't like and would prefer not to have to deal with. But I think on the whole, it has helped protect the economy. As we've said, lending is up. Banks are doing quite well. There are some banks that are struggling. Community banks did suffer probably the most in the financial crisis. And I think there are lots of folks, including us, who would say that there are things we could do to help them out. But if the trade-off is that we get rid of the one agency or hamper the one agency that's actually providing consumer protection, then that's a bridge too far.
The Congressman Pittenger has said that Dodd-Frank is impeding job growth. But isn't it unemployment down?
It is, but unemployment numbers obviously have a lot of wiggle room in there as far as are people not looking for jobs anymore and things like that. And, you know, any job that's not created, is a job that someone doesn't get. But, you know, overall, the employment rate is much better than it was, you know, certainly when Dodd-Frank was being passed.
And it's my understanding that even some big banks do not like the idea of a complete rollback of Dodd-Frank. Jamie Dimon, who heads JPMorgan Chase and who sits on Donald Trump's business council, says the industry doesn't want a wholesale throwing out of this law. Why? If it's such a bad law and it's hampering banks and it's slowing the economy and people can't get loans, why do banks want it?
Well, I think it does go back to that issue of it's nice for them to have everybody under this regulatory tent, that there isn't some shadow bank out there who can charge whatever interest rates they want and do better deals than they can. And we saw that in the financial crisis where everyone's, you know, if Countrywide's going to make, billions of dollars of loans, that's a loan we can't make. So maybe we should loosen our standards and compete with them. So for them, it is good to have everyone under the same standards. There's also some of the stress testing rules. If you remember in the financial crisis, there was sort of this domino effect of who do we even trade with? What bank can I even work with? Because they might be going out of business tomorrow. Right. And if all of the banks are healthier, that's good for JP Morgan if they don't have to worry that Bank of America or Citigroup or Wells Fargo is in trouble when they're doing business with them.
Speaking of which, what have we heard from the heads of Bank of America and Wells Fargo about their take on Dodd-Frank?
We've, Friday, I think it was the other day when Donald Trump signed this law, they're being pretty careful. I mean, I think they're still trying to figure out what will happen. Obviously there's Gary Cohn, former Goldman Sachs, is part of the team in the White House. He was sort of positive on we need to roll back these rules. I think the banks are still being kind of cautious and waiting to see what happens because, you know, there's been conflicting statements from the president on the campaign trail. You know, he was sort of against Wall Street banks. Now he's kind of loosening things up. I think they're probably kind of feeling their way around like everybody else.
Is there a way, Christopher Kukla, in your mind, to make some tweaks to this, to make it easier to get a loan, to make it easier for banks to give loans, to reduce perhaps some of the capitalization requirements for the smaller banks and still have protections in place so that we can't have a repeat of 2008 and make more people happy with this and not just totally throw the baby out with the bathwater?
Yeah, I mean, I think as I said before, I think there have been and continue to be conversations among groups like ours and industry groups to see whether there are opportunities to make adjustments. And those have happened, you know, even already. There were rules that the Consumer Bureau was was told to draft through the Dodd-Frank legislation around mortgage lending. Those have gone through a series of adjustments, and those were in large part due to conversations that the Bureau had with, engaged with industry and consumer folks to try to make sure that it was a workable standard while ensuring that folks were protected. And I think even the institutions that were involved in that process, have said that the Bureau showed flexibility and that they were willing to make changes when they needed to. And that's actually one of the reasons why now you have institutions saying they would prefer not to get rid of it, because they've been able to get the system into a place where they can actually work within it. They understand it, and it works for them. One thing Rick said, and I just want to point this out, is that many of the substantive mortgage protections that are in Dodd-Frank were actually modeled after laws that were passed here in North Carolina in 1999 and 2001. And those laws passed with the support of the Bankers Association, with the mortgage bankers, with consumer groups, and with legislators on both sides of the aisle. And North Carolina has been a leader in consumer financial protection for almost two decades now. And I think another one of the reasons why you may see institutions saying they don't necessarily want to get rid of all of it is standards like that institutions actually help to put together that have crafted a balance between consumer protection and the ability to lend have made North Carolina a banking capital and certainly served us well.
Let me bring in another point of view, and one from North Carolina. We're joined now by Peter Gwaltney, who's the CEO of the North Carolina Bankers Association. Mr. Gwaltney, thank you for joining us on such short notice. I appreciate it.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Good morning. And I understand that the Bankers Association is for repeal of Dodd-Frank. Is that correct?
No, that's actually not entirely accurate. We are supportive of the Financial Choice Act that is moving through the House Financial Services Committee very soon, that will be moving very soon, which is has been characterized as a repeal and replace of Dodd-Frank, but it's really, in our view, it's not. It's more of a reform around the edges of things that have been falling the regulations that came down as a result of Dodd-Frank. The regulatory burden was felt more greatly by community banks and regional banks. And so our hope is to see more tailored regulation for banks that don't present systemic risk, that are trying to serve their communities, and the compliance burden, the regulatory costs have just been so great. We'd like to see some relief.
Many people may not have heard of the Financial Choice Act. This is a bill that was co-sponsored by Congressman Robert Pittenger. It's been described by the New York Times, however, as a sledgehammer, not the way you not the way you described it. What does it entail? How would it be different from Dodd-Frank?
Well, it provides an off-ramp of certain regulatory oversight for banks with capital ratios in excess of 10%. In other words, if they have more capital and can withstand greater shocks in economic downturns, then the regulators can relieve them of some of the oversight that they currently receive. There is a provision in there that compels the regulatory agencies to tailor their oversight, their supervision of community and regional banks to the size, scope, and risk profile of those banks so that the supervision level is appropriate for the risk that they present. It also provides for banks that make mortgages and keep them in their portfolio for those to be qualified as deemed to be qualified mortgages, so that if a borrower doesn't check all the boxes under the qualified mortgage rule, then
Let me stop you there. We have to take a Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Doctors Making House Calls. Physician-owned and managed, Doctors Making House Calls works to help complex patients stay healthy at home and avoid unnecessary ER visits and hospitalizations. Details available at doctorsmakinghousecalls.com. And Tyndall Subaru, Gastonia, featuring the new Outback with EyeSight safety technology that sees problems and initiates action to help avoid trouble. Details at TyndallSubaru.com. The country's opioid crisis was given attention on the campaign trail last year. The problem is still growing, but what action is being taken to curb it? They will look into that On Point coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, part of On Point's 100-day spotlight with Tom Ashbrook. That's coming up. We'll continue our conversation about Dodd-Frank. To repeal or not to repeal, that is the question. You get to decide with these opposing points of view, and we're coming right back.
President Donald Trump is getting to work on his lengthy list of goals for the country.
We're going to have extreme vetting. We're going to have extreme vetting for people coming in to millions and millions of people losing their jobs. That won't happen.
Ends the policy of catch and release.
Follow the first 100 days of a new administration with coverage and analysis you can depend on. Listen every day.
Stay connected at 90.7 WFAE, at WFAE.org, and with our mobile app.
What do you say?
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the potential review of Dodd-Frank in Washington as proposed by an executive order put forth by President Trump. We're here with Rick Rothacker, a business reporter for the Charlotte Observer. We've just recently been joined by Peter Gwaltney, the CEO of the North Carolina Bankers Association. And we're also on the line with Christopher Kukla, Executive Vice President for the Center of Responsible Lending. Mr. Kukla and Mr. Gwaltney have different points of view on Dodd-Frank to a certain degree. And we were talking just before the break, and I'm sorry to have had to interrupt you, but we had to go to a break, Peter. You were talking about the Financial Choice Act, which is a proposal that's going through Congress that was put forth partially co-sponsored by Robert Pittenger, which would change some of these things. And Christopher Kukla, you believe that North Carolinians and by extension all Americans need these policies that have been enacted under Dodd-Frank, and you say that the Financial Choice Act would impede the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau from doing their job. Do you think that's their intent, or is just that just a byproduct of this?
No, I think that's the intent, and I think Congressman Hensarling, who is the chairman of the Financial Services Committee in the House, has been very clear that he would, if he had his way, he would get rid of the Bureau entirely. And so this law puts into place a few things that would make it much more difficult for the Bureau to do their job. One is that it would change it from a single director to a commission, and anyone who's dealt with any of the commissions in D.C. knows that the commission structure slows things down to a snail's pace and makes it incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to get things done to help consumers. It would also change the funding structure, where right now they are an independent agency, just like the banking regulators. So the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency is an independent agency, which allows them to have an independent funding stream. Congress is not does not have control over what their funding is like, and that's the Bureau is the same way. And the reason for that is to ensure that Congress can't step in and tell the Bureau to stop doing certain things that they're doing by reducing their funding. And in my prior life before I worked here, I worked on the Hill, and I was one of the staffers who was writing those those provisions that would say you cannot use this money to enforce this rule. And it was a way for Congress to be able to stop an agency from doing something that they would otherwise do. So I think certainly those two things alone would make it incredibly difficult for the Bureau to do their job.
So Peter Gwaltney, I know you work for banks and bankers, but bankers did some pretty nefarious things leading up to the 2008 crisis, and a lot of ordinary people were hurt. The banks, in some cases, were made whole by taxpayer money. And do bankers not think that consumers need some protections on their side?
Oh, absolutely. We need consumer protections. And as Christopher said earlier, North Carolina has been a leader in this area nationwide. So we fully support consumer protections, and we're not advocating for the removal of any consumer protections. The challenge with the CFPB and the regulations that have come down since the passage of Dodd-Frank, it's something like 53,000 pages of new rules and regulations that banks of all sizes have had to read, understand, and change their systems and try to comply with, some of those having to do with safety and soundness and some of them with consumer protection. The result is today, since the passage of Dodd-Frank, we have 40% fewer banks in North Carolina, which is pretty consistent state by state around the country. Banks are consolidating small banks, merging together or with larger banks to spread the cost of compliance across a larger organization. It's just getting too expensive to operate. And so we think it's better to have more banks, not fewer, more competition, not less. And so any relief we can get, both on safety and soundness, where appropriate, we want to advocate for that.
But, you know, deregulation, the interstate banking laws changed, and it allowed the Bank of America to become the Bank of America and for Wells Fargo to expand across the country. And we saw all these consolidations in medium to large size banks. Why is it a bad thing that all of a sudden, and it's happening in every single industry you can name in the country, consolidation? Why is it good for everybody else but not good for the banks?
Well, we're not saying it's not good for the banks. We're saying it's being accelerated at a faster pace since the passage of Dodd-Frank because of government overregulation.
Okay. This Financial Choice Act that you're in favor of and that Congressman Pittenger co-sponsored would ease up on enforcement of the Volcker Rule, which prohibits banks from owning hedge funds for their profits and from using depositors' funds to make investments in hedge funds. It would repeal the Durbin Amendment, which set a limit on fees that retailers are charged for debit card transactions, and it would replace big provisions of Dodd-Frank. So this sounds like it helps banks, but not necessarily retailers or small businesses or consumers.
Well, the Durbin Act was very controversial. It was kind of thrown into Dodd-Frank, and merchants really wanted it because they didn't want to pay as high as fees. Banks certainly liked getting those fees. Whether the merchants actually turned around and gave that money they saved back to the consumers might be questionable. So I think that will be a big flashpoint in this
And if I understand this correctly, the Financial Choice Act also takes taxpayers off the hook for bank bailouts, and it does that by removing the authority of the Financial Stability Oversight Council to designate firms as systematically important financial institutions. So is that to say that the too-big-to-fail banks would be allowed to fail under the Financial Choice Act?
My understanding is the push is to let banks fail, have a bankruptcy process where they can be taken apart just like any other, you know, widget company. We always worry when banks fall apart. There's so many interconnected issues that it's much more worse than just one company going out of business. And so they've tried to – right now there's these living wills where banks can try to say, here's how we would take ourselves apart if it came to that. And so I think the push is to have less taxpayers on the hook situations.
I know I have to let you go, Mr. Gwaltney, in a second or two, but is it a good idea to let banks start using depositors' money to make investments that could go bad and cause the bank to fail? Is that a good idea to go back to that system, or should we sandbox it?
No. And very few banks are actually engaged or would be involved in that type of business. The vast majority of the banks in North Carolina and most of the banks across the country are just mainstream commercial banks, community banks that never engaged in that kind of activity and, frankly, didn't make the kind of mortgages that led to the financial crisis that got people in trouble. Most of that was non-bank lenders, mortgage companies, mortgage lenders, mm-hmm. and we're paying the price, and the consumer will ultimately pay the price. Small businesses will too by having fewer banks and less choice. So we want common sense reforms. We want reasonable reforms. We're not asking for a repeal of Dodd-Frank. Okay. We want to work with both sides of the aisle to find things that are workable. And so these are good ideas, good things to discuss.
Peter Gwaltney is CEO of the North Carolina Bankers Association. He came on at the very last minute and made a dent in his own schedule, and he has to go now. But I thank you for taking time to talk to us. Appreciate it.
Sure, glad to talk to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're also here with Christopher Kukla, who is the Executive Vice President for the Center for Responsible Lending, and with Rick Rothacker, who is the business reporter for the Charlotte Observer. The executive order that the president signed, calling for this review of Dodd-Frank, orders delays and may ultimately quash a fiduciary rule in Dodd-Frank that would require investment brokers to act in the client's best interest. The congressman who was supposed to be with us, Congressman Pittenger, called this a wise decision. Christopher, I know you don't think it's a wise decision, but it just sounds on the face of it crazy. I'm sorry. It just does. What's your point of view?
Well, I think what it is it's the signal from the president that he supports efforts to try to roll back, you know, Dodd-Frank. And I think there's a certain amount that certainly the Treasury Secretary might be able to do, but most of what's going to happen will have to happen through Congress. And so Congress is going to have a lot to say about what happens. But certainly, you know, we're troubled not only by, you know, the Choice Act, which is clearly targeted toward trying to diminish the ability of the Consumer Protection Bureau to do its job, to remove some really, you know, some strong and important protections that we need to see. But there's also efforts in Congress to roll back rules that have already been put into place. So, for instance, there's this Congressional Review Act that allows Congress to vote to repeal a regulation. But if they do that, it also prohibits the agency from doing anything on that topic unless Congress decides it's okay. And so one of them, the more recent rules, was on prepaid cards, which are these cards that you put your money on, you load them. There have been huge problems in that market with excessive fees. There are some who are putting overdraft products on it. So not only it's supposed to be a prepaid card, which means once you run out of money, you can't use it, then they start charging you overdraft fees if you overdraft it. And anyone who saw what happened with the Rush card, where suddenly people couldn't get access to their money, they were missing bill payments, rent payments, things like that. We need more protections in that market, and Congress is moving to repeal that. So we have a lot going on right now that's frankly troubling.
I did a lot of reading on this yesterday, and many people look at this suggestion that we repeal the part of Dodd-Frank that requires brokers to act in the client's best interest. They find that very troubling. They also find this troubling. Steven Mnuchin, who may become the nation's next Secretary of the Treasury, has promised to kill parts of Dodd-Frank, including the Volcker Rule, which restricts banks from making certain kinds of speculative investments, the kind that led to the 2008 economic crisis. And Mr. Mnuchin is a hedge fund manager. Dodd-Frank impacts hedge funds. What should that tell us about him and or the proposal to kill Dodd-Frank, the motivation for the proposals to kill Dodd-Frank? What should that tell us, Rick?
Well, I mean, I think obviously the concern is, and often we see it, you know, bankers get these positions in Treasury and things like that, so they're going to come in with a perspective of working with the financial industry, where as opposed to being consumer advocates, perhaps. The Volcker Rule is interesting. You know, a lot of banks, Bank of America, you know, long before it really went into place, said we're not doing any of this kind of trading. We don't want to do that anymore. Sometimes implementing these rules is difficult. There are some trades that happen where the bank holds the money, you know, to make a trade for somebody else, and they worry that they get in trouble over that. So there is, you know, complying with some of the rules is difficult. But obviously, the idea of not letting banks trade with your depositors' money, you know, a lot of people welcomed that when it was passed.
And there are a lot of people in Congress who think we need to get out of the way. The government needs to get out of the way and let banks do what banks do, because that will help the economy. It will increase the availability of capital to expand the economy, et cetera. But if provisions of Glass-Steagall, which was the law that was put into place following the Great Depression in 1933 and repealed during the Bill Clinton administration, if that had not gone away, taking the ties and the fetters of government off banks, would we have gotten ourselves into the 2008 meltdown?
It's hard to tell. Certainly, taking away Glass-Steagall helped create bigger banks, which can eventually create bigger problems. Mm-hmm. When you talk to Dick Kovacevich, the former CEO of Wells Fargo and other banks, they'll say, well, the banks that really got in trouble were the single-focused banks, the countrywide mortgage lending companies, the investment banks that only did investment banking. They actually caused more problems than the big conglomerates. They all obviously had a lot of issues. So it's hard to kind of look back and say for sure what would have happened, but it did create bigger banks that can get into bigger trouble.
And even, Christopher, as Dodd-Frank has been underway for, I think, 6 years now or so, even with that, we recently had this scandal at Wells Fargo where employees were creating bogus accounts to get their bonuses. And some people, although they've since been made whole, were hurt by this in the short term. Does that speak to a need for government oversight? And yet it happened during Dodd-Frank. We had government oversight, and it still happened.
Well, but think about that. You know, those were programs that were started even before Dodd-Frank, you know, got on board, and the Consumer Bureau, you know, started in 2011. But we created, you know, Director Cordray and Elizabeth Warren created this thing out of scratch, from scratch. So it took some time to get it going. I think it absolutely does, and I think if you look at, you know, that's sort of the Wells Fargo situation is sort of a microcosm of a larger issue. You know, one of the issues that's popped up recently with that is that the folks who were getting hurt were bound by arbitration clauses, which prevented them from being able to go to court or to come together as a class and sue. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has had proposed rules for arbitration, and Congress has told them that if they put them in place, the Congress will immediately repeal them. You mentioned earlier, you know, letting banks do what they need to do, and that might be the solution now. I think letting sort of folks do what they wanted to do and letting the market sort it out is how we got into the mess of the financial crisis in the first place, that we had virtually unregulated mortgage broker and mortgage bankers out there making loans through, you know, using Wall Street money, nobody really paying attention to what was going on there, and nobody willing to step in and say, this is something that we probably should get in front of and stop. So I think what we did with Dodd-Frank, and I think that this is, you know, one of the hallmarks of it, is that we put in place a series of rules, but also put in place, you know, a regulatory scheme that would allow regulators to get ahead of these issues before they became crises. I'm hoping that our view of when we should step in as regulators is not only when the economy is destroyed, but that we should be looking at issues that might come up that could cause problems in the future.
And let me stop you there. Christopher Kukla with the Center for Responsible Lending and Rick Rothacker with the Charlotte Observer. Thank you both.